Hey, this is Todd Howard here at E3, and you're listening to the Through the Aftermath podcast.
Excuse me, just what the heck do you think you're doing?
What?
Who are you, and why are you doing the intro to our podcast?
You asked me to. I'm Todd Howard from Bethesda, and I'm being kind enough to help you out.
Okay, two things. First, I don't remember ever asking Todd Howard to do the intro to the show, although I gotta admit that would be awesome to have him do it.
Exactly. See how kind I'm being helping you out like this?
Well, see, that brings me to my second point, which is, you're not Todd Howard.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I don't know who you are, but you're not Todd Howard from Bethesda.
Yes, I am.
You're not. I've known who Todd Howard is for a long time, and you aren't him, and I think I would know.
Oh, I see, because of the whole Fallout so good thing.
Well, that too.
Maybe I got into an accident and had to have surgery.
No, you didn't. And you're not Todd Howard.
Your listeners don't know that. This is an audio recording. You have no proof that I'm not Todd.
Yeah, I do. See, Todd's voice is higher than yours, and you sound like, I don't know, a bored Al Franken.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, there it is.
You know, how dare you, really? Maybe I'm not Todd Howard, but here I am taking my time out here at E3 to help you.
Okay, that's another thing. This isn't E3.
Oh, now you're saying this isn't E3.
Nope.
Then how come we're surrounded by the ambient noise of the crowd, then?
Because you're holding a tape recorder in your hand with crowd noises on it. Yes, that's why.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Watch, I'll push this button right here.
Hey, don't push that.
Oh my gosh, E3 stopped.
Hey, thanks. That's great. Thanks for that.
I also know you're not at E3 because you're actually inside my house right now.
What? Your house? Why would I be in your house?
Well, that is the big question. The one I was going to ask you next, in fact.
Okay, fine, so I'm not Todd Howard, but I am a game developer, you know.
Oh, sure you are.
Yep, I made some pretty popular RPGs for the game consoles last year.
Really? Hmm. What was it called?
The game?
Yeah, come on.
It was called Lost Quest of the Broken Lake Sword Village of Eternal Fateness.
Fateness?
Fateness.
Sure, because when it comes to RPGs, there's no more harrowing a tale than that of fateness.
Yeah.
Especially when that isn't even a word.
Actually it is.
No, it's not. That's not English.
Well, that's because the game was a Japanese import.
Ooh, clever. But no.
You
know, let's just cut right to the point. How did you get into my house?
Yeah, through the window.
Ah, well, that's a start. And what's your name? Your real name?
Nathan.
Ah, Nathan.
Yeah,
wait a second. I do know you. I've seen you around the neighborhood. You're that guy who's been going door-to-door trying to sell vacuum cleaners to everybody.
Oh, you've seen...
That's right. You're telling everybody that they would be totally sold on it if they could just see how good the vacuum cleaner cleans for themselves. But no one's letting you in, huh?
No... No, not really.
And with nobody demoing vacuums, business has been tough, huh? So now you're stooping to new levels of weird, like pretending to be Todd Howard at E3 to get into my house.
Well, you gotta do what you have to when the money's getting tough.
Well, you definitely get an A+ for creativity for getting in the door. I have to say, I've never had a salesman pretend to be a game developer before, especially one that claims to be at a conference in California when I don't even live in California.
Yeah, continuity was definitely a problem there.
Oh, it sure was, I agree.
Does that mean you'll demo a vacuum since I'm here already?
No, not at all. It does mean, however, I'm going to call the police if you don't leave.
Ah, I see.
No, not out the window again. This way, you can use the door this time.
You want to hear something kind of funny?
No, not really.
The vacuum model I was going to try to sell you is called the Todd Line. And the company I work for is actually called Howard's. It's Thank Todd Howard.
Oh, so you just happened to get the name from the vacuum. Well, there's the door, Kaiser Soze.
I didn't even really plan that part. I just actually noticed it just now.
You know that it'd almost be funny if your being in here wasn't pretty much a felony.
Hey, after I leave, you're not going to still call the cops on me, are you?
Well, I guess we'll just have to leave that in the hands of fateness.
That was low.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 34th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
Doing good. It's been a little while since we talked.
Yeah, it has. We, you know, of course, we had E3 in there, right in the middle, and we, you had some computer problems, right?
Oh my gosh! You know, and you know, to the listeners, you know, it's funny. My computer decided to reenact the Battle of Pearl Harbor all by itself and play pretty much both sides of it. So yeah, that's the reason there's been a little bit of a delay between shows. You know, there was some satellite uplink trouble with that Sean and I were dealing with, and then right after that, my computer decided to go kill itself. So yeah, it drew out a lot longer. I think both Sean and I were banging our heads against the wall trying to get this back to play. But so far, so good. All's well that ends well. I mean, it's you know, a little bit of a hiccup there, but we're back in the game.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. You know, it's been a few. It's been what, like a month, I guess. It's been a while.
It has.
Wow.
I'm like, good God, we could have had a nuclear war, and everybody would have been like, you left us all by ourselves.
Well, I have received a few emails. People are like, so where are you guys at? You know, so yeah, we're still here. Just and also, I guess another good news part of that is I now have control over the feed. Where before, you know, Brent at Virgin Worlds was handling all that. And, you know, he has the entire collective to deal with and, you know, other stuff. And so essentially he said, okay, here, you know, I'll give you the information and you can do this yourself so that I'm not, you know, you're not waiting on me. So you might have noticed the last three episodes came all at once last week. So now actually once we get the episodes recorded and edited and everything, get the intro in, we can get them up right away that same day. So that's going to be really good for us. I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's a huge thing.
Yes, yeah, really excited. Yeah. So yeah, I guess other than that, I mean, what else have you been up to these last month?
Oh my goodness! Well, you know what's funny? Like I had this whole list in my mind of like, gotta talk about that, and it's funny because at the time you do it, you don't write it down because you're not thinking it's going to be that long, and then something happens, and then it gets longer, and then by the next thing you know, you got like 10 billion things that you all want to talk about, and then you're like, you can't remember any of them. It's like going to the video store and you walk in, you're like, crap, what was I going to rent? And you walk out with like, you know, Step Brothers, but you actually went in to buy something else and you're like, crap. And so it's funny. I had this whole list of like little things, not like massive list, but just little things here and there that I've been doing. But yeah, one thing real quick I wanted to mention that was kind of cool. You know, obviously, you know, we play Fallen Earth and we talk about it here and there. I did get a chance to dabble with both the Fallen Earth Android app and the iPhone app.
Oh, nice.
And it's the first time that we've, you know, they have these kind of apps, like you can get one for World of Warcraft, like there's the Armory, you can look at your character on your phone or whatever, they have them for EVE Online, but this is the first one that actually lets you interact, like you're actually logged into the game and you're on the chat from the game.
Yeah.
And right down to actually being able to mess with your crafting queue. And I have to say, you know, kudos to these guys for having the guts to actually, you know, step across that line and say, not only can you look at your stuff, but you can interact with the game. Cause isn't that what we wanted?
Yeah.
I mean, we can look at our, if we can look at our characters, we're going to play the game. But you know, it's like, if I'm, you know, in the middle of Nebraska, like stranded in a cornfield, then I feel obliged to check my crafting queue. I can do that, and that's important to me.
As long as you have the 3G network set up, right?
Yeah, that's true. Fortunately, at this moment, I do. Nebraska, I'm not sure which cornfield would have 3G, but maybe the corn would somehow broadcast the signal further. It can be done.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mention that because I went to I went to visit the guys at Fallen Earth at the studio in Cary, North Carolina. And did we talk about that? I don't think we did. Man, it's been so long.
I don't think we did.
Because that was back in May. It was like the end of May, and I think we had the intro show between then, the intro show and an email show. So I don't think we talked about it. But, yeah, they gave me a demo of that, the iPhone app and the Android and everything, and even the BlackBerry one. And it's really incredible, I think, because it's exactly like you said. You know, it's one of the first ones to actually do that with an MMO, you know, where you can have chat. And eventually they're going to have the auction house. The crafting is going to be set up where you can, you know, kind of mess with that. And then they have the auction house in there, and you can check out your guild mates and, you know, kind of all your items that you have equipped. So I think it's like one step beyond the ones that they have now for most other games that are just basically checking your items, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. I hope they keep doing it. I really do.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess the main topic, we're kind of going to have like a potpourri of topics on this show to catch up on a lot of stuff because it's been so long and there's so much we've been exposed to. But one of the big things we're going to talk about is E3, which is the Entertainment Electronics Expo, and that's held in L.A. every year. And that was in early June, so we haven't recorded an episode since then. So I wanted to talk about some of the things I saw there relating to post-apocalyptia. And, of course, this will be mainly games. You know, because that's what the whole thing is about. But also, we're also going to talk a little bit about a few movies we've seen since then. And we saw, or at least I saw, Waterworld. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I didn't want to devote an entire show to it. I think we can kind of get our impressions up pretty quickly.
A three-hour show?
Yeah. Because that would be the movie, right? And then also The Survivor. It's The Survivors, right? That BBC show?
Survivors.
Yeah, The Survivors, which is basically a BBC show that's all about a plague that takes over. And it's like a series that came out. Like last year, I believe?
I almost want to say they might even be on season three right now.
Oh, okay.
I believe they are. But so it's been, in Europe, I think it's been around for a couple of years. But BBC America, we just got it, I think, last year, like you said.
Yeah. So we're behind the curve on BBC.
Yeah.
But it's a great show, and we want to talk a little bit about that because I think I've watched a few more than Jonathan has, but I am absolutely loving that show.
Yeah, incredible show.
I want to talk about that. So, let's start out with the E3 stuff. In early June, I went to E3 in L.A., and it's basically what it is it's like an electronics – and it's slowly being taken over by video games. It's kind of mainly a video game expo. And it's enormous. It's probably the biggest one in America each year. And it's kind of like a nerd paradise. There's flashing lights and bright everything, you know, loud noises everywhere to distract you. And it's where all the big companies show their new games. You know, everyone has a giant booth, Nintendo, Sony, everyone, you know, it's just getting your attention everywhere. Particularly pertaining to us and what we'd be interested in the show was the Bethesda booth. Bethesda had three post-apocalyptic games that they're showing this year. They have Rage, they have Brink, and then they have the next Fallout New Vegas, which we've talked about before. We've talked about all three of those, but this is the first time that they showed kind of behind the scenes stuff. Now, unfortunately, I was not able to get in there and see a demo of these because for my job I cover MMO stuff and these aren't MMOs, so I wasn't able to get in there and see them and get an appointment. But from what I've seen, I guess since then they've released a lot of videos, and I just kind of wanted to go over a little bit about what these different games are. Now, you've probably been following Rage a lot more than me, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about what Rage is all about?
Yeah, actually, and it's funny because we knew Rage would be good. All we knew about it was that it was a post-apocalyptic game done by id Games, you know, the people behind Doom and Carmack's team and everything. And, you know, we knew it would be interesting to see, but they weren't talking much about it. And I have to tell you, it's, you know, curse me for saying this, but I've always been Mr. Like, hey, Fallout New Vegas, yay! And then I saw Rage and went, Fallout New, hello. And it was, that's literally what it was. I mean, when, what it is, it's, if you guys don't remember from like the past episodes, it's basically post-apocalyptic after a comet hit our planet, and some things have changed, and there's a mutation happening. You know, your typical post-apocalyptic story to an extent. But what's amazing about it is, first of all, the graphics engine in it, you almost have to see it to believe it, but there's a heavy emphasis on the vehicle type warfare type stuff. And it's very, you know, co-op playable. Everybody says the same thing. This is what Borderlands was going to be or should have been. And, you know, I love Borderlands just fine. Yeah. But you could tell that this was almost like, oh, this is the next iteration. And they were showing some stuff in this where it doesn't have quite the, you know, the insane weapons. You pick up 12 million different types of weapons along the way style. But what you see in that game is absolutely mind-blowing, right down to like little remote-controlled cars with bombs that you drive with the little camera into the room with the mutants and blow it up. And just like the graphics engine, even my mouth dropped, and I thought I'd seen it all. And it was, I think it's funny because we were just joking about this right before the show. It literally overnight became sort of like the game to watch for everyone involved. I mean, I think everybody went, what is this? Yeah. And you, like I said, you have to see it to believe it. The texturing in it is insane. And when they show the faraway canyons in the distance, the texture looks, I mean, you almost swear to God you're looking at a photorealistic, you know, picture. And yeah, if you haven't had a chance, you know, go up to gametrailers.com or even through G4.com, because that's where I saw it, was on G4's, you know, specials. Incredible game. And it looks like we're not quite sure when we're going to see it. Probably sometime next year from what they said. Yeah. But yeah, keep your eye on that one for sure.
Yeah, right now it's actually being voted in these little polls that they have of players and gamers. And people are voting it the most anticipated game of 2011, which is huge. Yeah. Because, I mean, we have some big games coming out next year.
Yeah.
So that says a lot.
Big games. Yeah. That's huge. And it's funny because, like I said, you know, I had my eye on it because it was post-apocalyptic, and I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, but after watching some of the gameplay footage, I'm like, okay, you guys, wow. You know, I don't know. You know, my tagline for Fallout's always been so good. And then, so I'm going to have to find one for Rage. It's like, so better, you know, but there'll be this confusion upturn at the end. Like, not sure.
Well,
cheating on girlfriend noise. There's something.
Well, I think what's funny is Bethesda, you know, they just realized that, you know what, this whole post-apocalyptic thing is huge, and they just full force. They went at it full force.
Dominating.
I mean, not only, you know, Fallout 3, of course, and you know, we also, and then New Vegas, of course, is coming out, which is essentially, from what I've seen of New Vegas, it looks just like Fallout 3. I mean, it's essentially the same looking game, but with a different kind of atmosphere. You know, the Vegas area that you'll be playing in is supposed to be a lot different, a lot less. There's going to be a lot more, like, you know, bright lights, big city kind of thing, where it's you're going to be like a downtown. It's not going to be as demolished and completely desolate as Fallout 3. Have you heard a lot about New Vegas?
Well, what they showed, and it was the first time we'd actually seen gameplay footage, and I've seen a couple of in demos come out of this. The one that actually stunned me was, you know, because some of the areas outside of town, they look a lot like something you'd see out of Fallout 3. But what stunned me was when they showed actually in Vegas and the way that they've modeled. The guy was explaining how they had modeled the different casinos off of style, you know, 50s style back then. And one of them is like, for example, there's one called Vault 59 or something like that. And it's the casino. I just butchered that name. It's probably not even what it is, but it's an old vault that this guy won in a poker game that he turned into a casino. And sure enough, you go down there and it's like this big old hotel. But the amazing thing is he showed how you can go in and actually sit down at the table and it's like a full on mini game. You're actually playing cards and playing the roulette. And it was, I was standing there like, well, now that is cool. Like these guys really took, like after seeing stuff like that, because I was doing the same thing, I was like, it's the Fallout 3 engine all over again. But they've really polished it. They showed a lot as far as you know, companions in the game, how you use this radial dial now to interact with them. Yeah. And it's, they've really polished the living crap out of that game. It's going to be, the more they show, the more I'm like, you know, like, it's so good.
Well, the thing I got out of it, yeah, they have that radial thing, and I think a lot, some of the game mechanics themselves are going to be a little bit different. But I think maybe it's just the character faces that get me, because I see the, you know, it's not the best face. I mean, it's
yeah, the character models aren't very...
It's almost like they're still using the Oblivion stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's not as bad as Oblivion, yeah, but it's still got that kind of blah-ish look to it. And you're right. I mean, that's one where I kind of stand there going, eh. But I didn't know. I haven't seen any sign of them changing, other than the fact that you do see a super mutant wearing gigantic heart shaped sunglasses like Elton John, and I thought that was kind of funny. But but new weapons though, so that's cool.
Yeah. I'm excited. It's supposed to be a little bit different, and it'll be kind of it's almost like a new expansion for Fallout 3, but then a giant improvement over the game itself too. Like it's all kind of mixed into one. Actually, maybe that's not even fair, because I think it's probably adding a lot more to it than that. But
and this is the kicker. This would be my final statement: is the developer himself said, we don't want to bag on Bethesda, but our game is more of the spiritual successor to Fallout 1 and 2 than theirs. Mm. Because theirs was a sort of offshoot story. These guys, you're dealing with the stuff that happened after Fallout 2 and the people you met in Fallout 2. Yeah. And he didn't give much detail, but he just said, you know, obviously New California Republic and stuff like that. But he mentioned you're going to see a lot of throwbacks to stuff that happened in the first two games. And that right there was enough to make me go, oh, because the Fallout lore is where it really shines, and that's cool to hear that we're doing that.
Yeah. That is pretty cool. I'm really looking forward to that, because, you know, I've been playing these games forever.
So
that's cool. And okay, so the other game that Bethesda had, the other post-apocalyptic game, was Brink. And Brink is a little less post-apocalyptic, I guess, of the three. It is still kind of, I'm not really sure actually of the lore behind it, but it's actually a little, I don't want to say cartoony, because it's not really cartoony. It's like a little stylized.
Yeah, stylized is a good way to put it. People look a little elongated and kind of silly, like Ichabod Crane in the Disney, like Sleepy Hollow movie kind of goofy.
Yeah, but the textures themselves, like the textures are realistic, and it's almost like getting that ultra realistic. Actually, some really incredible textures wrapped on kind of an elongated, you know, like I said, stylized kind of a character model. Which I think works personally. You know, I think
it does.
When, you know, if you try to get too realistic, that's when people start looking at it. And, you know, as human beings, we look at stuff that's supposed to be realistic and we say, that doesn't look realistic. But if you go for a cartoony, stylized look, then you forgive it. You know, you're like, oh, well, they're going for a different look. I think it's like that with, like, Star Wars The Old Republic is like that, where, you know, they're going for that different look so that automatically you don't say, oh, they're trying to go ultra realistic, but they didn't quite make it. And then you don't dwell on that, and you can move on and play the game. You know, so but actually, a lot of Brink. I've watched a lot of their videos, and again, I didn't get to see it at E3. I saw that they had a demo video playing at the booth, but I didn't get to see it behind closed doors. But it is very, it's very Borderlands. You know, again, just like Rage, it's very. Kind of, they have this one video that they show where they have like a sniper set up, and he shoots this guy in the head, and then another guy shoots the sniper, and then kind of the stealthy ninja kind of guy goes up and kills that guy. You know, it's like one after the other, kind of a progression of the, you know, almost like a food chain type of thing. And so it's basically showing you that there are all these different ways to play the game, and everyone has an advantage and disadvantage, of course. The thing that really gets me is I want to see more about what's going to set these games apart from each other. Because if they're all going to be releasing right about the same time, people are going to be going, well, they're, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic game and it's from Bethesda. So they're going to inevitably get them mixed up. That's why I hope to kind of get, you know, once we start getting closer to release, kind of figure out what these, how different these are. And of course they are very different. It's just getting that into the consumer's brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
It's definitely set itself apart. I just tell people, like, yeah, just picture the environments of that up-and-coming game Bulletstorm, but everybody fell into a taffy puller, like, right before they got in the game. And you have a pretty good idea of, you
yeah.
know. It looks like fun, though. It does. Yeah. It's like the post-apocalyptic game of, you know, the games of the year. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, we asked for more games and we got all these.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've actually compared a lot of games to Team Fortress 2, but I think it is very Team Fortress 2. Yes. It's like Borderlands and Fallout and Team Fortress 2 kind of mixed together, you know.
Yes.
But it looks like a lot of fun. I'm excited for all three of these games, and you can definitely count on us talking more about these in the future. This E3 reveal was kind of you know, the icing, to kind of get us a little bit hungry for more, I guess you could say. But I really look forward to these games. And you know, one thing I think it shows and it proves is that, you know, last year, I mean, 2009 and even 2010 so far has been heavily post-apocalyptic, you know. And that's one of the reasons we started this podcast, you know, because we could see that trend coming. Well, this is showing us that it's still going. You know, we're into 2011 probably for a few more years, you know.
Yeah.
This is going to go on for a while.
You know, that's interesting. It's almost like a social experiment, because I know that there was this big surge of, like, sci-fi and post-apocalyptic in the 60s and 70s because of, you know, they attributed to Vietnam, you know, some of the depression coming off of the deep Vietnam War. And I wonder if – it makes you kind of wonder if some of the post-apocalyptic, there's this sort of, like, subconscious, like, not to say doom and gloom, but, like – looking forward to, like, making it through a disaster when, like, because, you know, the economy around the world is kind of tanking.
Yeah.
And or having tanked and hopefully upturning some point. But, yeah, it's interesting that I wonder if that really is true. Like, we're sort of upsurging with it.
Well, yeah, I think we've actually talked about that before, and I 100% believe that, because, you know, you look at those trends, the 60s and then the 80s was with the Cold War and everything, and everybody was afraid of Russia, and that's when we were big into it. And here we are again, you know, with, you know, the horrible economy we have and the fact that, you know, Pakistan has nukes and, you know, we have all of these, and, you know, North Korea and all this, and we have these chances that anything could happen at any time. And I think that's why we kind of get ourselves into this. And
yeah.
You know, like we're going to talk about later, that's a Survivor show. We've had a lot of these types of shows lately. It's kind of like, what would you do in this situation kind of a thing. And I think that's always really interesting.
Yeah, it goes to that's how many shows we've done. We've done so many, I can't even remember that we talked about it. It's like, was that a conversation I had at work, or was I talking to Sean?
Oh yeah, I'm the same way, because I never know which podcast I said certain things. But one story I wanted to talk about before we leave the E3 topic. Let me just say I can die now. I can say that I can honestly die now. I have done something that was a life goal of mine for a while, and that is to meet Brian Fargo. And so anyone who doesn't know, Brian Fargo is the guy who started Interplay. Interplay in the early 80s, up through the late 80s, they're the ones who made, Wasteland. I mean, the original Wasteland was kind of their flagship project. And it was a hit, though. I mean, it was a hit back then, which it wasn't, was really nothing. I don't know how many copies it sold, but, you know, on the Commodore 64, basically, there wasn't a huge market for it, but it was a very popular game for those who played the Commodore 64. And I literally played that game every single day when I was in probably 8th grade, I would say, probably 7th and 8th grade. It came out in 87, so yeah, I guess 7th and 8th grade is when I played it. And that game completely got me into post-apocalyptic games. It got me into role-playing games. I mean, before that I was playing, I was playing stuff like Bard's Tale, which actually, ironically, was another Interplay game, and the Gold Box series, and a lot of fantasy games. But Wasteland is the one that got me into the kind of sci-fi version of a role-playing game at that age. And, you know, before that, I played the Atari 2600, and I played, like, arcade-type games. But it wasn't until I really got into Wasteland that I really turned wholeheartedly into role-playing games. So I really owed so much to the creation of Wasteland, you know, what it did for me. I mean, here I am, I'm a game journalist, and I'm doing this for a living because of stuff like Wasteland. So, you know, the guy who started this all, you know, Brian Fargo, of course, is kind of like an icon, I guess you could say. I don't want to say anything like hero or you know, idol or anything like that, because I don't want to be him. But it's just the fact that he really kind of did a lot for my life. And of course, anyone who played Wasteland knows that there was actually an NPC in Vegas toward the end of the game named Farron Brigo, and that's of course a play on Brian Fargo. And I had a character in Guild Wars that I named Farron Brigo after him, and I've done that in a few other games too. I've named it. And actually, it's funny. I was going to name a Fallen Earth character Farron Brigo, but somebody already did it.
It's probably him.
But I'm hanging out at the Bethesda booth. I'm looking, kind of watching their video that they have playing there, and I'm longingly looking toward the back of the booth where all the where the demo was and everything. And I see this guy walk out. Now, of course, Brian Fargo is on my he's a friend of mine on Facebook, and which doesn't really mean anything. I mean, I don't know the guy, but so I know what he looks like, right? And so I see this guy come out of the back, and it's Brian Fargo. And I'm like, that guy looks exactly like Brian Fargo. So I kind of sneak a look at his name tag that he has on. Everybody has a name badge, and it said Brian Fargo. And I'm like, first of all, my first thought was, oh my God, that's Brian Fargo. My second thought was, why is he at the Bethesda booth in the back? You know, it's like, that's kind of odd. So I go up to him. He's walking around the side, and he's kind of away from the crowd. And so I kind of go up behind him, and I'm like, hey, Brian. And he turns around, and I said, hey, I'm Sean Schuster from Massively.com. And he's just looking at me like, yeah, like he's a little worried. And I said, I'm just a huge fan, you know, ever since the Wasteland days, just huge fan. I just wanted to say thank you. And I really appreciate all the work you've done. And once I said that, he kind of loosened up. Like, it looked like at first he was waiting for me to ask him, you know, for an interview or something like that. But so he kind of lightened up, and he shook my hand. He's like, oh, thanks. You know, I'm glad you appreciate Wasteland. He says, actually, we're trying to bring Wasteland back in some form or another. And when he said that, I was like,
oh,
I was like, really? What? Like, and the thing that gets me is he brought Bard's Tale back, you know, for the original Xbox and the PlayStation. Or no, I think it was just Xbox, actually. But he brought Bard's Tale back. So if he could do that, and here we are in this popular time of post-apocalyptic games, if they bring Wasteland back, I mean, you know, I'm not saying anything official here or anything. This is just completely, he said in some form, so I don't know what that means exactly. But I don't know. It's pretty exciting. That was the very brief conversation I had with him. You know, I shook his hand, and I've never washed that hand again. No, just so I thought that was pretty exciting. You know, that little tidbit there, just to kind of, fanboy out.
Icing on the cake there.
Yeah, it was definitely a fanboy moment. I mean, it's been a long time since I've had a real fanboy moment like that. You know, I've talked to Richard Garriott, and I've, you know, a few other people where it's kind of like, wow, this guy is really famous. But to sit there and shake hands and have kind of a one-on-one, you know, with Brian Fargo was pretty cool. I wish it could have lasted longer, but I didn't really want to bother him. You know, he looked like he's pretty busy, but that was pretty cool. That was definitely the highlight of my E3. I mean, there was a lot of really great stuff that happened, but that was something I've been wanting to do for a long time. So that was cool.
That's really cool. Well, and it's kind of funny because every year we've sort of had that, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, who do we get to talk to? Like last time it was, you know, Pete Hines and Ashley Chung, and this time it's like Brian Fargo. It's like okay, well, I can die now.
yeah, it's pretty incredible. So yeah, it was a great time. It was, you know, beside the Bethesda booth, there weren't really too many other games. There was a racing game, I forgot the name of it, but there's a post-apocalyptic racing game. Is it Fuel? I think no, maybe not Fuel. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But there was it seemed like there was one of those, and then there was there were a lot of zombie games. There was Dead Rising 2 had a great booth. I don't know if you remember me telling you about at GDC they had that Zombrex thing.
Zombrex,
yeah, and so they took it one step further now, and their booth at E3 was there was this cage, and it was just big enough to hold one person in it, and there was this like person dressed up like a zombie inside, and they were kind of moaning and like holding the bars and like, you know, shambling back and forth. And there were guards, like people dressed up as like security guards, all around the cage. So people would walk by, and the zombie would stick his arms out and try to grab at people. And the people kind of role playing as guards would be like, "Hey, get away! You know, get away from!" And then they'd kind of slap the zombie's hand. And at one point, they had this role playing kind of event that happened every I don't know, probably 30, 40 minutes, where these people came up and they were dressed like they had kind of like hippie clothes on, like they were supposed to be humanitarians, and they were trying to save the zombies. So they would run up and they would start fighting with the guards, and they'd be like, "Free the zombies! Zombies are people too!" And they would try to actually unlock the cage and let the zombie out. Wow. And so it was funny, and like the guards would fight with them, and then they would take the hippies away. And the remaining guards would stay there, and this is all an act, of course. And the one of the remaining guards was like really kind of, you know, hardcore, and he would go up to people who were walking by, and he'd be like, "You know, there's nothing to see here. Keep moving on." And if you stood there for a minute, he would actually get right up in your face and be like, "What's your name? What are you doing here?" And he'd start yelling at you. And it was pretty funny. Like they had some really good actors there, and the makeup work was amazing on those zombies. I mean, they had like ripped up clothes, and like under the clothes was like their flesh was all hanging, and you could see like the bones underneath and everything. It was really, really cool. I'd like to know who did that makeup, actually. It was really cool. But man, those guys, those Dead Rising guys, they, I think the Zombrex thing was really cool, but that was like one step further. It was really cool.
Well, and that game is seriously, I don't know if you ever played Dead Rising. Like you can still buy, did you ever
play? No, I didn't.
Yeah, because you can pick it up. I believe you can pick it up on the Xbox On Demand for like $20. Oh. It's still probably all around one of my favorite Xbox games just because it's so much fun to play. Just the fact that you literally pick up everything in the mall and use it as a weapon in some ridiculous form. And it just looks like a blast because now, you know, now we have it on PC, which is good. But also because it's multiplayer, which is what the only thing that we were waiting for. So that's it's going to be great.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, I usually don't fall too much into hype on games and everything, but these guys have done such a great job. So I'm curious to see how the game will be. But even though it's not an MMO, so I can't officially write about it. It's funny. I find myself more and more into single player games lately. I've just, you know, I got my 360, and I've just been playing the heck out of like Red Dead Redemption and Dragon Age and Mass Effect 2, and you know, just going crazy.
Yeah, it's all Steam's fault. Yes. Steam and their stinking sales that bankrupt us and really do put us in the into the next apocalypse.
So. Oh yeah, well Steam, yeah, for the PC stuff, yeah, Steam has definitely been doing that to me. Yeah, $5 games. It's the devil.
It is.
But so cool. Yeah, that's basically all I had on E3 that I wanted to talk about. But so let's talk a little bit about Waterworld. We were actually going to do a show, an entire show about Waterworld, but I figured you know, we could probably talk about our impressions, I guess. And one of the main reasons I wanted to talk about our impressions was because it gets such bad press. You know, poor Kevin Costner. You know, he makes movies. He makes like 3-hour movies, and they never get the best reviews. Waterworld is a movie that I think it's kind of like The Postman in Water. You know, it's kind of it's almost like it didn't really have to be made. And that's not, I'm not trying to give it a bad review, but I'm just saying like it's one of those things where it's like, it's almost like,
it really is a cult classic.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those movies. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's one of those movies that if you have to really love post-apocalyptic stuff to be able to enjoy this on a level much higher than just like plotline or, you know, acting and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like if you're looking for a movie with the best acting and the best plotline ever, and, you know, surprises and plot twists, that's, you know, you're not going to find that here. But I think that it's for the post-apocalyptic fan, it's definitely something that it has some great visuals. Like, I'm big into costuming, kind of post-apocalyptic costuming, you know, and I love to just even look at that kind of stuff and see the visuals and see what's going on and how they put things together. And this is a movie that's amazing for that. You know, there's so many different types of characters with like salvaged materials on them as, you know, armor and clothing and stuff like that. So I find it really, I think it's very, it's up there with like the Road Warrior with as far as costuming, I think. So it's, that part of it I absolutely loved. What did you think about the movie?
You know, it's like you said, you know, there were parts of the movie that were a little bit over the top at moments, but all around, I remember seeing it in the theater with my dad, and it's funny because it was the first movie I ever went to where the film actually broke halfway through, and I was just like, ah, curse you! You know, it was like, you know, so we got to move to a different theater and go see it again, but, and I was actually like thrilled. I walked to that movie theater, and I was like, oh, that was a blast! And I remember, just for a long time afterward, just telling everybody, and it was so funny looking back that I was doing this, telling everybody about the boat. Like, the boat was cool because it had this, and there was underwater parts, and it had these things, and he did this with the boat, and that's the thing that I think everybody kind of mentions, is that the real star of the movie is the boat. And the minute the boat breaks, and it's not on the boat, then it's like, But I thought that even the humor was a great fun thing. I loved that that Dennis Hopper was... What are they, the deacon? Is that what they called him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved his character. I mean, the fact that he sort of had this insane, you know, he wasn't necessarily evil. He was just so methodical in the way he did things. It was just, you know, he just knew what he had to do in a brutal world, and if that was evil, so be it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, you just reminded me, when we were originally going to do this show, that was right when Dennis Hopper died, and it was going to be kind of a tribute thing to him to do.
That's right.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Dennis Hopper, he's left us.
I know. I was like, that was one where I almost, you know, we had a lot of people that weekend suddenly decide to go die. Right. But that was the one that really just brought a little tear to the eye because I, you know, Dennis Hopper has been such a player in a lot of the movies that I just, for the rest of my life, I'm like, those are the best movies ever made. And I think the rest of the day to hide my, you know, sadness was, you know, joking about Dennis Hopper, you know, going up, you know, like we were supposed to put into his obituary, you know, are they going to say he was a kind man? Man, you want to say a good man? I mean, come on, man. I mean, it was like, we were just like doing that just to like try not to snap or something. But yeah, that's, you know, hats off on that one because, yeah, that was a sad day to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. And his role in Waterworld, I think, was really great. He played the villain well. You know, and that's kind of typical of a Kevin Costner movie. There's always that villain. And there's the girl that Kevin Costner saves from the villain, and you know it's funny. But I still enjoy his movies. I think if you don't like Kevin Costner, if you don't like cheesiness in movies, then you're going to hate this movie. You have to be a little open minded with stuff like that, and not really expect. I mean, it has some good action, I think, which is pretty typical again of Kevin Costner movies. You know, you think about like Dances with Wolves and The Postman, and there's some nice action sequences, and this definitely had it, like you said, with the boat, you know, the kind of jumping back and forth on the boat to, you know, where he was having the battles with the other pirates on the water, and that was some really cool stuff. But it's kind of typical where it's like stuff that's way out there where it's like that would never happen. You know,
Interesting character. I mean, there's the one other thing too is if you're this kind of person who nitpicks the living crap out of logic and the fact that couldn't happen because this, and you somehow find that the continuity error, you won't like it either because there is some continuity. I mean, the way these atolls, and that's what they call these outposts, these floating outposts where the people, survivors are. But I thought the concept was a hoot. I mean, it was interesting to have these outposts in the middle of nowhere that are just amongst this, like, flow, you know, this world covered in water, and I thought it was a great fun idea.
Yeah, it was a good movie. It was a good idea for a movie. Yeah. So I guess, like, overall, would you recommend it to our listeners?
I would indeed. And if you want the amusing thought at the very end, for those of you who have seen the movie Napoleon Dynamite and remember the girl who was his little girlfriend who had the ponytail at the side, that was the girl from Waterworld.
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember being the first one to pick up on that in my house going, that's the girl from Waterworld. I mean, it just gave it this element of, like, hilarity to it. It's like, well, she went crazy from being on the boat, I guess. I don't know.
That's right.
It's a great movie. It's a lot of fun.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Actually, yeah, because I'm a huge fan of Napoleon Dynamite. And yeah, I was like, oh, there's Deb. That's a little Deb. But she was also on, what was that? When a Man Loves a Woman with Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, I think.
Little, and Andy Garcia.
Yeah, she was a little younger back then, I think. But yeah.
I'll always see her. It's like, just imagine you're relaxed, a bunch of tiny little seahorses. I'm like, oh no, that's where she got it from, was from there.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's talk about survivors for a little bit. That's now, I guess the basic premise is, we'll just give the basic premise. It's a BBC show, it's British, and it's pretty high budget. And it's something, like you said, it's been around for a couple of years over in Britain, but here we just got it on BBC America last year. So the general idea is there's a plague, and it wipes out, was it like 99% of the population or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, I believe that was what it was. It was like 99% of the population.
Yeah, so there are still people left. I mean, you know, and they're running into each other. They're kind of getting together. It's not like a complete desolation. But they're trying to kind of rebuild society, and there's like this little group of people who get together, and it's very typical of anything you find like this, like Dies of Fire. It actually reminds me a lot of S.M. Sterling's Dies of Fire, because the little groups of people getting together separately and then getting together, you know, a little bit later to kind of form like a new group, I guess you could say. And then they have conflicts among them, and then they you know, fight with other groups and things like that. And I am only, let's see, I think I'm like six episodes in. I'm not sure if there are three seasons. We're still in season one. We're getting it from Netflix. But I am really enjoying it so far. And while I'm watching it, it's funny, my girlfriend and I are watching it, and we're both really enjoying it. And while we're watching it, I was thinking, you know, it might just be the fact that I'm watching it right now, but I seriously think it might be better than Jericho. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, because Jericho, it, how do I put this without saying them? Like the Jericho, the overall storyline of Jericho, the whole, you know, underlying story, for those of you who haven't seen it, there's an underlying story that I thought overall was really cool, but there was a lot of a little bit too much kind of fill at times in between. And whereas this one's more like 28 Days Later feeling, yeah, like where things move very quickly and they're always kind of on the move to an extent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I just, I mean, I'm not knocking Jericho, but before I thought Jericho was a great show, but this is like kind of one up to Jericho, I think.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. You know, and I have to say, I guess this is kind of a testament to how good it is, but I have to say that BBC shows, I never really get into that much. I find that the style is a little bit different than I enjoy usually. I'm not sure what it is, but so I guess even when I started watching this, I wasn't expecting to love it. You know what I mean? I was expecting to be like, oh, another, you know, BBC show. and I don't know what it is though. I can't really pinpoint what it is, but I really liked it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm to the point right now. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but one of the main characters is looking for her son through most of, you know, what we've watched so far, and that's kind of, there's always like this hope where she thinks she might find him, and then she thinks she sees him, and then, you know, we don't know if that's really him or not. So that's kind of her struggle. And then there are other people where we're just starting to realize like what they were before, you know, before the plague, and we're starting to realize like, you know, what they did and how they got here and everything. And there's such a eclectic background on everyone separately. You know, it's not like everyone is the same. They're all so much different. And I think that's interesting, especially when you start bringing that kind of stuff out later. It's almost like Lost. You know, in Lost, it took us like 40 years to find – no, not that long. It took us a long time to find out about, you know, what was kind of going on in that show. But I think that Survivors does it better because we know what's going on, or at least we think we do. And it's not a lot of it's not as much mystery as Lost, but it's almost like the ride is just as fun, you know? It's the ride getting there, even though you kind of know what's going on. But you still don't know. Okay, here's a plot thing that isn't really giving anything away. The main character, or one of the main characters, the girl who's actually looking for her son, when the plague hits, she actually dies. And then she comes back to life. Or she doesn't completely die. I think she's like right on the verge of death, but she comes back, she recovers from the plague, and so far, she's the only one that's done that. So, like, she doesn't know why this happened. And as the viewer of the show, you're wondering, you know, all these other people died of this plague. Why didn't she die? Or why did she come back? Like, what is it about her? So you know that they're going to reveal something like that on about that later, you know, and that keeps you interested. Trying to find out how these people are going to get together or how they're going to stay together because they keep separating and other groups kind of fight with them and kidnap, you know, like one member of the group and then they have to go get them and stuff like that, which is pretty typical. But that keeps you wanting to watch more, you know, and so far I'm really enjoying it. I'm really looking forward to watching all of them, I think.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting is, you know, in the process of getting ready to do the show, you know, I jumped onto the wiki page, and much to my surprise, evidently season 3 was when they canceled.
Oh, so they didn't have
to. I knew this was going to happen. I had this feeling. Yeah, it looks like they announced it in April that due to poor viewing figures, which is interesting, Survivors had been canceled. So
they didn't have a season 3 then? Or,
well, they had a season 3, but it ended on a really nasty cliffhanger, and they announced that, as far as we know, that that's the last that they did it, which, I don't know, maybe everybody was watching EastEnders at the time that this came on, I don't know. But that one thing that's interesting, though, and I'm hoping for this, one thing I've seen about British shows, because I know what you mean when you say that they shows from the BBC are a little bit different than we're probably used to here in the States, because I'm a fanatic with British comedies, much like a lot of us here are, you know, Red Dwarf and Monty Python, all those. And one thing that I have seen that's happened is they oftentimes have come back with a canceled show and put an ending to it.
Okay.
And like, for example, the British The Office, there was actually some time that passed from the last season, and then all of a sudden they actually had this final 2-hour episode that was the ending. So I'm hoping, knowing that that is the case, that maybe they'll actually, you know, pop out with an ending to this story, because it sure deserves one. From luckily I skipped a part in the wiki that I was like, whoa, plot spoiler there. But it's good to know that, though, because it was kind of like with Jericho. You knew that with Jericho there was going to be kind of this abrupt sort of ending because they kind of hurried up.
Yeah.
But knowing that in advance made it easier to bear.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I remember with Jericho, it was kind of like, you know, dragging us along, and then bam, oh, we need to hurry up and end this in the next 3 episodes, and that's what they did. And I don't know. I guess that's another thing that kind of reminds me of Lost, because it did that too, and I think a lot of series like that, you know, they start out with this grand idea, and then just to kind of see if it'll pick up, and especially with Lost, where, hey, you know, it's popular. People love this show. So, we got to drag it out for a while. We got to drag it out for the next 5 years or whatever. And so they did that. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, our ratings are starting to go down. We need to, I'm not sure if this is what happened, but, you know, just as an example. And so we need to hurry up and wrap this up. So to know that Survivors, that happened with that they, you know, the poor viewership and everything, and they had to kind of end it. That's pretty sad, because I would like to see it kind of get a proper ending. But I'm still excited to see, at least up to the cliffhanger. I'll be pissed off.
I'm wondering, well, because the wiki says that 2 series so far have been produced. Series 1, blah, blah, blah. Series 2 ran with a cliffhanger. It is announced that due to poor reviewing figures, Survivors had been canceled. And what's funny is I'm kind of like, my head kind of cocks to the side a little bit, because I'm like, I swear to God, I just saw this preview for it on BBC America, and it was saying season 3, but maybe I'm remembering it incorrectly. Interesting. I'm curious to look on BBC America.com and check this, because
the Americans have taken over and they're making their own season 3, and it has like Matthew McConaughey in it and like
and Steve Carell. Yeah. Oh man. Oh, that's. That's funnier than I think most of us probably realize. I don't know. Whenever we Americans try to redo a British show, it never quite ever has that feel.
Yeah.
Oh, heavens.
But yeah, that's one I would definitely recommend for people to check out. And, you know, especially if you have Netflix, it's kind of handy just to get the discs in and, you know, check them out. I've been doing this actually – you know, since I got my 360, I've been watching. I used to watch the Netflix streaming on my computer. Now I'm watching it on my TV through the 360, which is a world of difference. And we're watching like everything that's ever been made on Discovery Channel and Learning Channel, because I've always said I wish I don't subscribe to cable at all, but I always said that I wish I could just subscribe to one channel, because I would subscribe to like TLC or maybe HGTV or something like that. I love those channels, you know, Discovery Channel. I love those, and I've been watching. Have you ever watched Survivor Man?
Mm-hmm. I remember that show.
So I'm going back actually and watching a lot of the old seasons of that, and I'm having a lot of fun with that. The guy is Les Stroud. He's a nut. I guess kind of an interjection here. I also met Bear Grylls at E3.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has a game coming out, and he was at his booth, and I got to shake his hand. But I'm kind of a big fan of Bear's because he does Man vs. Wild, and I really love those types of shows, you know, the Survivor shows. But what I think is funny, and this is kind of going off on a tangent here from Survivors, but Man vs. Wild is very, like, high-energy, kind of the extreme version of survival. You know, Bear is a ex-military, and he's like this superhuman guy that can like jump out of planes and then land on his feet and run and, you know, like eat bugs at the same time. And some of the things he's done has just been crazy stuff. And that's the entertainment value in that. But in Survivor Man, the guy stays out there for 7 days, you know, and all he has is like a tent, you know, and like he has to make everything else. And Bear is kind of like go in, go out kind of thing. But Survivor Man is more about kind of a long-term thing. And I find it more, maybe not more entertaining, but more interesting. And for anyone out there who hasn't seen Survivor Man, I highly recommend it. Some of the things that he does in there is really incredible stuff. There have been episodes where he's kind of role-played being like on a desert island, crashed in a boat. And he'll say, you know, I have this boat here, and I need to make use of it. So he'll take apart the boat. I mean, there was one where he carries his harmonica with him everywhere on all the episodes. And he had the harmonica, and he's like, you know what, I need to hunt. And this is quite a sacrifice, but I need to do this. So he starts taking apart his harmonica, and he makes a spearhead out of the metal in the harmonica so that he can hunt with a spear. And I think that stuff's great. You know, it's amazing stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that you'll see, I think, on Survivor Man versus Man vs. Wild. Although, I do have to say something. We actually had an email about this one time where someone said, on Man vs. Wild, there was an episode where he does an urban survival thing. Did you ever see that?
You know, I didn't. I wondered if they had ever tried something like that, because it would be really interesting if they did more of that.
Yeah, it was really interesting, although I think at the same time it was in that style of Man vs. Wild where he just kind of goes in and quickly goes through it, and I just feel like it's too quick sometimes. But he landed. They dropped him off on the top of a building in. It was like somewhere. I want to say it was in Russia, or maybe in Georgia up there. You know, in Russia, in the Soviet Union, and it was like this abandoned city. You know, kind of like Chernobyl. And they dropped him off in there, and they were kind of like, this is like a post-apocalyptic survival thing. And we want to show what you would do in that, in the event of something like that. So he's running around, he has a lot of scrap to pick up. He goes inside of a car, actually, and he makes a bed inside of a car that's upside down. Like, he just found this car there. And he takes the stuffing out, and he makes like a little bed, and then he shows how to make a fire. And he takes the gasoline out, and he takes the oil, and he like shows the uses of everything, which is really interesting stuff. So I think overall for me, my personal opinion is I like Survivor Man more, but that one episode of Bear, I was gonna say Bear versus Wild, Man versus Wild is actually, I think it's really interesting, that urban one.
Wow. Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. It makes me want to go back and see if I can find that online somewhere.
Actually, yeah, it's on Netflix streaming.
Right on Netflix streaming. Then.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out, because it's just one of those things you can just pop on and watch. You know, it's I forgot what season it's in. It might even be season one, because I'm kind of watching them in order. But yeah, good times, good stuff.
I'll have to bust that one out. I've been doing the Netflix streaming quite a bit lately.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Okay, so I wanted to read a few emails to kind of end this show. We received quite a few email, but some of these go back to May, so I wanted to read over some of them. This one I like a lot. If not, I mean, it's a great email, but at the end, you'll see. Okay, this is from Mike, and he says, "Hey, fellow Wastelanders, I've got a tale of the waste for you. 3 months ago, I was in need of a new electronic fix. Hacking the computer terminals was starting to lose its shine, and a buddy of mine had clued me into a new simulation running through the wastelands. I ran right out and killed the nearest raider for a copy of Fallout 3. But this is where the tale turns sad. Due to my little Republic of Mike's proximity to the water, I work on a 185-foot crew boat in the Gulf of Mexico in exchange for ammo and caps for 28 days at a time with no terminal access between 14-day breaks. Then I remembered the Virgin Worlds Collective and a radio broadcast that had started up just about the time I had quit listening to EQIQ. To make a long story short, I spent my next 28 days with your first 28 episodes whispering in my ear as I worked on engines and deratifying the food processor. yes, I may have some slight brain trauma due to such through the aftermath exposure, but it sits nicely with the way the water glows at night. From my 14 days managing the Republic, I finished the main quest in Fallout 3 and was left with another dilemma, what to do for my next 28 days. Then, like the voice of reason or dementia, Sean and Jonathan whispered in my ear, skill books. My next 28 days was spent reading Left Behind, The Postman, Just Another Judgment Day, The Road, Wasteland's Story of the Apocalypse, and finally Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the last of which being the only reason they didn't tie me to the mast on Suicide Watch. So being a little burnt out and a big believer in learning where you came from to where you're going, I'm now catching up on the Online Gamers Anthology. Just wanted to let you both know that the impact your broadcast has on the lives of Wastelanders, such as myself, that it lets us know no matter how far from the wasteland we roam, you can always come home and shoot somebody. So stop by sometime. P.S. Sorry about this being pasted in the back of a rad scorpion, all out of pigeons.
That is priceless. And it's funny too. I love that it's always 28 days
later. Yeah, that's a something right there. And this is from Overlord Mike, and I love his signature. He puts Overlord Mike, the president of the Republic of Mike.
that was incredibly well
that's
done.
That's a great email. I love that.
That is a good one.
That's some good stuff. No questions or anything, but I had to read that. It was just really incredible. And you know, I really appreciate when people write stuff like that. I mean, I know we get a lot of emails that even tell you about how great Online Gamers Anthology was and is. So we definitely appreciate that kind of stuff. I mean, even to know, you know, I would have never imagined that we had a guy, you know, doing shifts like that on the Gulf of Mexico in a boat, and you know, he listens to our show like that, all at once. You know what I mean? Like, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Well, that's exactly right. It's great that, you know, it's sometimes doing a podcast, you know, for those of you out there who've done them, you know what we're talking about. Sometimes it can be kind of thankless at times. Like, it really is a labor of love, and you hear things here and there, but you get something like that, it just kind of puts the smile on your face. Yeah. I mean, it really makes it feel worthwhile. It really does.
Yeah, definitely. Well, cool. This next one is from Matt, and he says, "Hey, I just listened to your last podcast, and I'm hooked. You guys put together a great podcast on post-apocalyptic culture. I just wanted to mention that I recently launched the first episode of my post-apocalyptic web series called Hollywood Wasteland, which you can see at www.hollywoodwasteland.net, and that's all one word, Hollywood Wasteland. I thought it might be relevant to your listeners. Also, I heard you guys were coming to L.A. for E3. Well, this is an old email. It says, I'm in L.A. and I will be going to E3. Anyway, thanks for your time. Keep up the great work." There was another, Aiken was talking about meeting up at E3. I never got to meet up with him, but man, that would have been great, you know, to have kind of a little mini meetup, but I was so busy. I mean, I was literally busy from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. So, one of these days though, it would be cool to kind of set some time away to meet up with people like that. Definitely.
Definitely.
If I, you know, we've talked before about going to, you're going to Fanfare, right?
Yep, going to Fanfare. Only about a month left.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know.
Did you ever find out if you're
going?
No,
I don't know for sure if I'm going or not. I think there's actually another thing happening at the same time, another event. I think it's Gamescom in Germany. I'm not sure which, but we're trying to figure out if we can send me to one of those or which one and all that stuff. But so I'm not sure if I'm going to go or not. But something like that I think would even be cool. I mean, that's in Las Vegas, and it would be cool to kind of get together with. I mean, especially Vegas, you know, New Vegas.
Oh yeah,
to kind of get together with people. So I'll find out if I'm going to be able to go and everything. Maybe.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so that was just another one where he basically wanted us to check out his web series, HollywoodWasteland.net. So check that out.
I will. Yeah, I'll add that to my list here.
This next one is from Bill, who does the post-apocalyptic forum, and he says, "Hey, Jonathan, post-apocalyptic forum member Death Rattle has decided to try to get an online post-apocalyptic book club going, and the inaugural meeting will be on Saturday, June 26th." And what they did was they discussed Stephen King's The Stand. If you record a show before then, can you help us get the word out? Well, sorry about that. So the email actually continues. It says, discussion will be on our IRC channel, and he leaves a link for that. But we also have a one-click option for those not familiar with IRC. Just go to postapocalypticforum.com, click on live chat in the top menu, and he gives a little bit more on that. But I think, let's see, at the end of this email, he talks about how The Stand was actually a good choice for the first meeting, and I agree because you know that is one of those early kind of works of those early post-apocalyptic books that really got me more into it too. I read that when I was quite young, and I think that is definitely a good early one. If you guys do later ones though. Like this, you know, he wrote this on June 7th, so he gave me plenty of time, but we didn't record a show before then. And we actually just missed that, June 26th. But if you guys do another one, you know, and if anyone out there is interested, check out postapocalypticforum.com. It's all one word. And you can check that out and see if they're going to do another one of these book clubs, because I think that's a good idea. You know, we kind of cover our impressions of books, but we do so much more for games and movies. You know, that's kind of our big thing on this show. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, books, you know, if you want to check that out more, you could definitely go over there and see what they're talking about.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed we missed that. I'll just tell them that, you know, sorry we missed that because, you know, we were trying to go to Boulder, Colorado to meet Mother Abigail, and we got screwed up on the turnpike in St. Louis and ended up in Wisconsin, and nobody was there. So, yeah, we were late to the party.
MOON, that spells Wisconsin.
Yeah. Good one. I'm going to write that down.
Let's see. We got the next email here. It says, "Hi guys, love the show. Even here in a freezing winter in Australia, damn those zombie roos." I was wanting to get your opinion on what you think is the best Fallout mod out there at the moment. Having played since launch on the Xbox, I recently switched over to the PC version, and he says, I love Steam, and I was looking to expand the experience with some quality player-made content. Again, love the show. Regards, Giant Dave 7. So, Fallout 3 mod, the best one. We've talked about this pretty early in our show, like last year we used to talk about that. Have you been keeping up with them at all?
Oh yeah, it's and it's funny because they like every time I turn around, they come out with like just tons more mods. Every time I think I've seen everything. I still hold to the you know the ones where they up the textures by far. It definitely changes the game. But if you one thing you want to check out is go back and look because there has been some pretty amazing. Missions created, like new adventures to do, some even taking you outside of Washington, D.C., which, and some of these are incredibly well done. So, yeah, it's definitely something you want to check out.
And these are all player-made, right?
Yeah, they're all player-made. The place that that everybody seems to go to is the same place. It's the Fallout 3 Nexus, which is Fallout3Nexus.com. Mm-hmm. And that they have anything from a top 100 you know, voted ones to, you know, what's new, you know, what are you looking for? Is it a mission? Is it a texture change? You'll have enough mods there to probably keep you occupied for the next 100 years, which is why I'm still playing it. I'm still playing Morrowind because of these people. So it really is like that. I mean, it's some amazing stuff coming from the community. And that's one thing I've always appreciated is Bethesda knows that the community will always come out with the best stuff, and so they hand them the tools to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, if you want to find the best mod, you go on there, and they, like you said, they have the top 100. You can see what other people like, and that's usually a really good indicator. You know, you see what's number one, number two. That's how I found a few of my favorite ones. And my favorite ones are usually something to do with pets, you know, like when you, mm-hmm. you can call down the helicopter to kind of bring a backup. I love those mods. Those are always my favorite. And, you know, so you run around with like a mini army of Brotherhood of Steel kind of helping you out. And those are always fun. And the Enclave, too. They have that one where the Enclave helicopter brings...
Yeah, you can call in the Enclave airstrikes.
Yeah, that is fun. It's almost like God mode. It's just insane, but it's fun to mess with. But
you know, honestly, what my favorite one is, and this will be my closing thought on that is there's one called GNR. It's called, I think it's called like War Where That Came From or something like that. And one of my biggest things is I love the real music from era back then.
Yeah, me too.
And what these guys did was basically add like I think they're up to like 80 songs now that they add from that era. On top of the ones that are already there for GNR. And so, but they do it in a way, the way that the system is built for it is, it's almost like flawless. Like you can't tell where the new music kicked in and the old stuff was because it knows how to make it sound like it never stopped.
Oh.
And so he added a lot of music from like BioShock that you heard and a lot of, like, 50s type, you know, big band type stuff. Incredibly well done.
That's cool.
That's probably the one I would recommend the most.
That's really cool. I love that music. I don't have the soundtrack, but I downloaded pretty much all of the songs, which I probably shouldn't mention. but I love that music. Absolutely love it. I listen to it all the time. But yeah, that's a cool mod. I'll have to check that out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, our next email is actually not a question or anything, but it's a pretty incredible. This is from Rob, who's written to us many times before. And the title of the email is, "What is the story here?" And the little subtitle says, "What happened to the radiation that's supposed to last thousands of years for Hiroshima?" Now, it shows pictures of Hiroshima in 1945. It's completely destroyed, you know, I mean, just leveled. You know, we've talked about that before. And then it shows a picture of Hiroshima 64 years later, the way it looks now. And it's a bustling metropolis. You know, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's so bright and colorful and just technologically advanced, you know, and it's just kind of a testament to how much they've really grown, how much they've mm-hmm. rebuilt and everything, which is good. But you scroll down here and there are at least a dozen pictures. There's all kinds of, you know, skyscrapers and lights and everywhere. So you get to the bottom, and guess which city they have modern day to show kind of the opposite of the rebuilding that was done in Hiroshima.
So like say that one more time.
So okay, so they have the contrast to show another city that's kind of the opposite of what happened with Hiroshima, where it went from being a great city into a complete disaster.
Mine would either be Detroit.
Yep,
would be my number one. Was
yep,
that it?
You got it.
Funny, Pripyat in Ukraine would have been my second, and Detroit wins. How about that? That is funny.
Yeah, it's actually that's the point of the emails. It's kind of showing that these two. You know, these two cities have kind of done the exact polar opposite of each other, and there's just these sad pictures of Detroit. It's just like houses falling over, and, you know, it's just a mess.
It's so sad.
I know. And so at the end here, they say, and this is a little political, but it says, "What has caused more long-term destruction, the A-bomb or U.S. politics?" So,
ooh.
Yeah, it's kind of like, ow.
Thinker. Yeah, wow. Ow. Yes. So, yeah, somebody was making a point.
Hey, we don't make points on this show. What's going on? So I thought that was really interesting, and I, you know, I have to agree. I mean, I just look at that, and it's like, That's horrible. You know, that's just to show that you can bomb a city in Japan completely, you know, completely down, and they'll rebuild it, and then, you know, you can have a city here where that makes the, you know, that started the automobile revolution, you know, and some of the greatest automobiles ever made, and now look at it. You know, it's just, I mean, you're from Detroit, right? Or at least a
Oh yeah. And it's, you know, we've watched it. You know, I grew up in the late 70s and then the 80s, and then, you know, the 80s, of course, are the ones I seem to remember the most, which is ironic, go figure. But it's true, you know, it's, you know, during a lot of the economic changes there, and, you know, how things changed, especially, I got out right before it got really creepy, but my sister, funny enough, is visiting there right now. It's really sad just how just everything just kind of, like, we tell people that, like, oh, I hear that's a real rough area. Well, it's not so much rough. It's just, it's sad. It's just, you know, it's not like, you know, where you hear about these, you know, the old 90s jokes about South Central, you know. It's more like just going to a place where everything just looks like it's been bombed out, and it's just, you know, an era lost, and it really is like rapture. I mean, let's be honest. Because it's all this 1950s stuff, but the running joke that we have is, you know, what would happen if, you know, would the aliens, you know, oh, what if aliens invaded Detroit? And it's like, oh, they didn't? Oh, I thought, oh, okay. So, or would we know if they did, or would the news know where to go with it?
They would land, and they'd be like, we're too late.
Yeah, it's like, they've already come. The Andorians beat us. We're leaving. It's like, that's it. Us all along. That's a skit intro for another.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay, so this next email, I love the title of this email. It is literally titled, Sean, You Should Turn Your Headset Down Just a Little Bit.
Oh, my goodness.
It says, hey, how's it going, guys? So I am the first going to say what the subject suggests. Note, Sean, you might want to turn your headset off or speakers. Oh, I see why he's saying this, because Jonathan is literally going to do a flip out of his chair. Okay, I see why he's saying this. He says, because you're going to flip out. But this, of course, is, well, this email is 10 days old, but he's talking about the new Fallout MMO, which we did not mention.
Yes. You know, I toyed with the idea. No, continue, because it's interesting. My point that I'm going to, my closing thought in this is going to take some of you off guard.
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, it's interesting. No, keep going.
Okay, he says, on E3, they announced the Fallout MMO, and on their website, you can sign up for the beta, almost like that of that StarCraft II thing, where you sign up for it, and then they send you an email when they are done with it, saying, here is your beta, have fun. And let me tell you, the intro to signing up is really cool, in all caps. He says, I literally pissed myself when I saw this, because it was one of those things where you're searching something on Google and then you see the keywords flare up and you see man marries pillow and you go like, oh, man marrying pillow, nothing new. I don't know what he's talking about. And then you go, wait, here's a link to Interplay's website to go sign for it. And it's fallout-on-line.com. You know, I don't know. This is not in the email, but it's kind of peculiar, I guess, is that they did that. The on-line thing. Maybe mm-hmm. Fallout-online was already taken. I don't know.
Yeah, they were trying. Yeah, somebody had already snagged it, figuring they were going to eat some money, and these guys just went around him and said, we don't have to. We can add a dash.
A dash solves everything. So now on to post-apocalyptic-related things. You guys should talk about alien infestation, because technically, from the alien infestation books I have read, they talk about stuff like an Independence Day where the alien ships blow up crap, but in the books it is to the point where the world has fallen to an apocalypse. Another thing, you guys, have you ever read the Zombie Survival Guide or World War Z? We've had quite a few emails about World War Z. Mm-hmm. And it says those two books are amazingly good. Here's another apocalypse I think you guys missed. There are books about vampire apocalypse, obviously during the time when vampirism and hunting for them was really badass. There's also one that I found in my local bookstore about how to survive the vampire apocalypse present. It is a comedy about how to survive this fad where vampires are sparkle and crap like that, and teaches you how to avoid this fad and what you should do to those who have fallen victim, which includes arson. Wow, that's awesome. I guess that's talking about like Twilight and how it's kind of destroying our world. I think that's what you're saying.
Yes.
Collectively.
Yes. I also have an idea you guys should try out. You guys should role play an entire show in the aftermath of your choice. It can be possible because We're Alive, which is one of my favorite podcasts, does this. You guys can even make it something like Herbert Daring Dashwood type of a thing. That's kind of cool. Like
do it up like a different flavor.
Yeah, like just pick our favorite apocalypse and just kind of role play the entire show. I wonder if people would be into that.
I'd be for that. Like you said, do it like Herbert Dashwood, like that old, you know, 50s radio show style, like that, Sean, right now, you know.
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay, so this last paragraph, he says, now this part goes to Sean. From what I heard is that you like that survival aspect and like simulating it right now how it would be. Well, my parents are Ukrainian and one of their parents are Siberian, probably butchered that name. Every summer I go visit my relatives in Ukraine and then my grandparents in Siberia. In Siberia, my grandparents live in a community that was built in the 70s and was just built straight up from the people. It's a really cool thing, and the community is remade now. And instead of wood and drywall, it's remade instead of wood and drywall. However, they still have the old values where there's a hunting shop, a butcher, tailor, etc. It's really cool because this community is like what would have happened if in reality the bombs fell. And if you are determined what your little itty-bitty log cabin community can turn into is a fully self-sufficient running community. And when I'm there, my grandpa sometimes takes me out to hunt deer. And it's so much fun. You get into these old 80s Russian vehicles that were designed to hold cargo and people. And in those cargo vehicles, it's filled with coolers to store the deer and camping supplies for a group of 10. And you would go out with 10 people to the hunting grounds. And it's a really fun experience, even if you aren't a hunter. So hope the show keeps going really well, Stev. That's pretty cool. I'm picturing that. You know, I'm picturing like this kind of, I guess he's talking about like it's a community just kind of built around, like you said, what would have happened if the bombs actually fell? That's crazy to think about. And these old 80s Russian vehicles going out to hunt. It's like just like these tanks I'm picturing. You know, like,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, that's wild.
That's crazy. So, yeah, I always appreciate these kind of emails, especially, you know, kind of learning about the other parts of the world, you know, and how things are done like that. I always have kind of a deep respect for places like that, you know, where I had a friend, a coworker who was from Bosnia, and he would tell me a lot about the way things are in Bosnia. And, you know, during the 90s, it was just a big war zone. So it was a lot of what, you know, 5 years earlier was technologically advanced. You know, these skyscrapers and stuff were just blown out. And, you know, you watch movies like Behind Enemy Lines and stuff like that. You can kind of see what that's like. And so he would tell me stories of this stuff, and they would literally be in the middle of the city where it's just blown out and stuff like that, and they would be living in these blown out buildings and still doing stuff like raising chickens, you know, and raising goats and stuff like that, and they would be doing this stuff in the middle of a blown out city. And I always thought that was very post-apocalyptic, you know, that's very kind of like survival, and I was always interested in that kind of stuff. And it's funny because I'd be like, wow, that sounds cool, and he's like, no, it wasn't cool at all. like oh, sorry, yeah.
It's like, what? Oh. Killjoy, no. Oh. Well, here's my thoughts on the Fallout Online. And what I say is I approach this with half of my mind screaming like, oh, yeah, and the other half of my mind going, And what I'll say is it comes from the fact of knowing that Interplay and Bethesda are still in the middle of this quiet, you know, it kind of ramped up and then got quiet again, heated battle behind the scenes where for those of you who remember, basically, they had a certain amount of time, Interplay had a certain amount of time to prove that they had this online game ready at a certain point, or else Bethesda regained control, and they passed that point. And so where we're at right now is that Bethesda's like, it's ours now, and Interplay's going, no, it's not, and they're still trying to make this game. And what I'm seeing so far is very hopeful. I'm feeling that part of me that loves Fallout starting to go, but the whole time there's one other thing that's occurring to me. And that is a lot of the people who are part of the original Fallout team, they're no longer at Interplay. There's one or two guys from the original team who are part of this supposedly, and that's all we know. Yeah. And then everybody else is, went off to, Obsidian or wherever else, you know. And so there's this part of me, like, what I tell people, like, what I think of it, there's that, like I said, there's a part of me that's like, oh my God. But there's that other part of me that I can only describe as that scene in Two Towers when Smeagol, he's like, Smeagol, come to Master, hurry! You know, when he's behind the waterfall and it's a trap. And Smeagol's like, go to Master now. You know, but he's got that kind of, like, freaked out, like, I know you're playing me. But I can't help but reach forward, and that's the whole time I'm thinking that. Like I feel like Smeagol going, "Kurtur Master." You know, it's like some stars in a tunnel. It's weird. So I have this part of me that wants to like freak out, like, "Oh my God!" But there's this part of me that goes, "Airtrack trap." I mean, it just feels like I could feel the floor falling out from this.
Oh,
like it
fall
feels.
Out.
Fall out. That's when it comes full circle and it turns out to be a political thing. It's almost like I'm waiting. Some of this this could be paranoia, this feeling of being rushed as fast as possible to give the appearance of having there be some progress made.
Yeah.
And I could be completely high. I could be completely wrong. Maybe they really do have it. But if they lose, no matter what they have, if they lose this battle in court and Bethesda regains control of it, then the whole floor falls anyway. And that's the one thing that I keep going, we haven't heard the end of this yet. Mm-hmm. And the one thing to consider for those of you out there, this will be my final thought of this. Those of you out there, I've heard a lot of people on the forums, some of which people probably aren't paying attention. They say something like, Bethesda, they're good, but they'll wreck it. And I want the original Interplay guys. Remember that Interplay, most of the original guys are at Obsidian. And right now they're the ones teamed with Bethesda. Mm-hmm. And so if Bethesda regains control, they could very well have, Fergus Urquhart, may ask for control of that, and they may very well hand it back to him. Yeah. And so you can see where I'm kind of going. Like those of us who, have watched it for some time are kind of, doing the Smeagol thing, not quite sure, but yes, I am like Smeagol at night, though, talking to myself like, no, Interplay wouldn't do that, And then there's that part of me like, screaming at them like, Aaron, never come back,
Yeah.
But we'll see. Time will tell. I get nervous for that, but every once in a while you do hear that like, I weirded myself out when I did that. I was like,
I could listen to you do a whole show like that. but you're absolutely right though. That is a very good point about the Interplay guys all being at Bethesda now, and they're the ones working on Vegas, right? New Vegas.
Right? Yep, yeah. They are, and it's true. Interplay does have one or two guys. Supposedly, when they did it, they quote grabbed one of the guys back, and I forget which of them it was. I think it was Tim Kaine that they got back. But it's almost like saying, we're going to remake Star Wars because we got the guy who did the sound.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's it. But yet you have all the guys from Star Wars over here going, what? And it's something like, I think people get too carried away with Interplay, the name, trying. And it's like, yeah, but most of those guys aren't the same people. Mm. It's not the same Interplay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I could be completely wrong, and Fallout Online comes out, in which case I will be the first to scream like a girl.
I actually agree with you, though. I think that it's kind of scary. We have some other elements of this, too. Earthrise, who, we actually, last year about this time, we had that interview with Atanas Atanasoff, I guess he's the CEO, I guess, of the guys who are making Earthrise, and that was supposed to be, post-apocalyptic MMO, but we haven't heard anything at all about them. And we at Massively, we've been trying to get in contact with them, and we haven't heard anything. So it's kind of scary. But we know that those guys are working on the engine for the Fallout MMO. I mean, that's already been confirmed. So
right.
So we know what I imagine, and it doesn't take a genius to figure this out, that they're probably kind of taking, salvaging Earthrise to use it in the Fallout MMO, and to get that out,
hurry it through.
Yeah, so I imagine that's probably what Interplay did. They're like, hey, we'll just buy what you have in Earthrise, and we'll just use that for, the engine and everything, and we'll just use that for this so we can get it out quickly. Which isn't to say, I think that's both a good thing and a bad thing. I think it's a good thing because it means that it's not just this thing that they've thrown together really quickly. It's like they're actually buying something that's been worked on for years. The bad thing about that is they're adapting it to, you know, theoretically, they're adapting it over to Fallout, to the Fallout.
Yes.
So that part of
it feels desperate.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, and people can tell. You know what I mean? You can't just do this stuff quickly and, you know, throw. You can't throw. What's the saying? Throwing a dress on a pit bull or something like that. Yeah, I mean, you can't do that and expect people not to notice. So I'm interested. I'm just as interested as anyone else to see how this Fallout MMO thing will happen. I mean, it was big news, but it's one of those things where it's like we know this is part of a lawsuit, you know, to get the information out quickly. So who knows?
Yes.
Who knows?
And that's the scary part. If there wasn't a lawsuit, I'd probably be the first in line. But there's just something about how quickly they're moving and rushing that, you know, if everything works out great, I'll be the first to cheer, like I said, and scream like a girl. But if there's something about this that just reeks of John Romero daikatanaism. And it's like it's almost like when the game comes out, we're going to just kind of stare at it. It's a lot like that Stargate game that Stargate MMO that was coming out. And then all of a sudden it became this first person shooter and you're going, that's what you did. And it was almost like I can feel this happening. And I think that's why I'm so apprehensive, is because it's almost like I'm looking at Interplay going, you're preaching to a part of me that wants you to have this be real more than anybody. But if you take me for a ride and you drop me, I don't know if I could recover from this. And it's almost like dating a supermodel and being afraid she'll break up with you.
Yeah.
Only the supermodel's post-apocalyptic. That was really weird.
A zombie supermodel. There you go.
Yeah, zombie supermodel. Yes, at least that way, if she broke up with you, it'd be because she had been killed. So.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the last email here. This is a short and sweet one. It says, I saw on television a story about an underground bunker being constructed under the desert, designed to survive everything from a nuclear war to an impact by a mythical Sumerian planet. And the website for this is terravivos.com, TerraVivos.com. Sincerely, Locke. Let me see here.
I saw this guy on TV. Like, he was on, I think they had a thing about the Discovery Channel. It's a guy who got some people together, and essentially the reason this came up is it was on, I caught wind of it when it was on Bethesda's, I almost want to say I sent the link to you. Like, it was on Bethesda's blog site, and it was a guy, they were mimicking the fact that we were like, boy, this sounds a lot like the vaults.
Yeah.
Like getting a community vault together.
When you go to their website, they actually have a thing that they did on Nightline, on ABC News, and it plays a little video there, but it has pictures of it. And yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's like vaults.
It is. It's almost eerie because they're serious. And I think it's like $50,000 per person. And what it does is it guarantees you a spot for you and your family in this underground vault. And the thing is built to be self-contained in case and be able to withstand a nuclear attack. And it's cool, though. I mean, it's interesting to look at and go, somebody really did this.
Yeah. That's crazy. Their tagline is the ultimate underground shelter network for survival of future catastrophes. Wow.
Which is great until they start pumping, you know, hallucinogenic music through the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
And then everybody degenerates and kills each other. So,
It looks really cool, though. They're showing in this video, they're showing all the different areas. And it's huge. I mean, this isn't like a little, you know, bomb shelter. This is a huge thing. I guess it's
multi-level.
Yeah. It's actually, it seems like it's bigger than the vaults in Fallout. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm gonna start saving up for one now, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, it'll like, oh man, you know, if I lived there, it would just be, there would be whole, like, if we lived at the same vault, there would just be laughter all the time because we would just be making jokes right and left, right down to the, like, do I get my Pip-Boy when I'm 10?
Yeah,
you know, quick, the overseer knows he's mad. We've got to escape through the tunnel. I mean, it would just go insane and we'd get kicked out. So.
That's true. I mean, between that and the Beavis and Butthead voices, yeah, that would we'd be like,
yeah, and completely off subject here, but just for hoots, because since everybody like knows we do that, I did get an email sent to me with a link that just announced that my judge is saying he's done 30 more Beavis and Buttheads.
Whoa.
No joke. He just announced that he's in the process of doing them. And I'm like, well, now that's what I'm talking about. Completely off the subject, but hilarious nonetheless. So there's the reason we'd be laughing, I guess.
That's awesome. Well, cool. Yeah, I guess if you want to check out this website, again, it's TerraVivos.com, TerraVivos.com. And they have a video there from ABC News and tons of information, it looks like. They have a video tour of the things. Yeah, and on the video, they just showed that it's $50,000 per adult and $25,000 for each child. That's just to live there.
Yeah. Yeah, just to live there. And it's check out the pictures, because this website, they've really evolved it since the last time I peeked at it. So, and it sounds like it's working. They have intention to build, I think, another 30 of them.
Wow.
Which is really, I'm trying really hard to hold back the laughter when I heard that, because I'm like, oh, like Vault 32 and they're Vault 49 and Vault. Oh, heavens. But, cool idea, though. Cool idea.
Well, when they make the 101st one, then I'll go ahead and. Maybe I'll have the money saved up.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be telling your son, like, you know, like, we've lived here your whole life. So. That's good stuff.
Well, let's go ahead. Wow, we're in an hour and a half here. Let's go ahead and
We had a lot to catch up on.
Show up. But, yeah, if you want to email us and have us read your email on the show, it's ttaftermath@gmail.com, and you can check out our website at throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com, and that's Through the Aftermath, it's all one word, and then .blogspot.com, and that's where we put the show notes for each of these shows with links to some of the things we've talked about. And also over at the Virgin Worlds Collective, you can check us out over there. That's Brent over the Virgin Worlds Collective hosts the feed for this show, so when you listen to it on iTunes, that's all the Virgin Worlds Collective. So, and also we have some sponsors, and I'm not sure if they're still sponsors or not, but Reverend, Wolfenhex, and Tipajik. That's the way their names are listed here. I know Tipajik is going to get on me. every time I say that, he writes me an email and tells me he changed his name, but that's the way it's listed there. So, so thanks guys for the sponsorship on Virgin Worlds. We greatly appreciate it. And
definitely.
Yeah. So. I guess that's about it, huh?
That's about it. Yeah, that was a large banquet, a buffet of many different subjects, and yeah, that was the blueberry pie at the end. So you're turning violet on it.
So we have the second part of the intro show to look forward to pretty soon, right?
So yeah, it's you're probably wondering why, you know, you've heard part one of the intro math and not part two. You know, most of it was due to the computer issue, but and I swear to God, we're not doing the George Lucas thing where we wait 3 years and then come out with another episode. So yeah, you'll probably be hearing that one shortly after this one, and you know, keep remembering which ones you want to lock in your votes on, because you know, part two is where I got to admit, part two is where the skits that I get a kick out of really kick in. So.
Well, cool. I look forward to that. And then what I'm really looking forward to is see what people vote for, you know, see
Me
what
too.
The favorites are.
Me too.
Well, cool. So I guess that's about it. We also have the Twitter and Facebook. You can check us out. And like I said, email us and we'll, you know, let us know any good media you've checked out, movies, books, games, and we'll read it on the show. So until next time, I'm Sean.
And this is Jonathan saying, stay alive. Still alive out there. Dude, I was doing that the other day with Darren. Dude, Darren was doing it too. Darren is almost like funnier at it than I am, because he'd be like, the trees, the trees. I was like, ah.